Can God be trusted? Can God be trusted? When the waters are rising and the flood is rolling in, when you get the divorce papers, when you have the long deal with a family member or a friend, when you lose a loved one, can God be trusted? I'm not sure that there really are any more important questions in life than that one. We're in a teaching series on Sunday mornings called Bookends, and if you're just joining with us, we've been studying through Genesis chapters 1 through 11, really since Easter. So for the last 10 weeks, we're about to wrap it up in the next week or so, and then we'll jump into the other bookend of the Bible this fall. We'll jump into the book of Revelation. We spent a lot of time last week talking about Noah and the flood and what godly obedience looks like. This morning, I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on the text, okay? Instead, I just really want to sort of use it as a jumping off point to ask that very important question. There are going to be very few notes for you to take, so, you may need to get the person next to you to kind of sharpen up their elbows or whatever. But hopefully, I'm going to say a few things that will be worth your time. That question, can God be trusted, was really prompted in my mind a couple weeks ago when I found this video clip as I was preparing for last week. It's from an HBO show called Real Time with Bill Maher. It's from 2014, and in it, Bill Maher just sort of goes on this rant about the upcoming movie at that time, Noah. And he started off his little deal at the very end of the show by saying, "No one can blame me when I say that this is a stupid country when 60% of the adults in it think that the Noah's Ark story is literal." And from there, it just sort of went downhill. I'm going to show you 1 minute of it, okay? I think it's 1 minute and 7 seconds. Take a look.
I don't know about the elephants on Noah's Ark, but the elephant in the room in 2014 is that we are now a full 4 centuries removed from the scientific revolution. 4 centuries after Copernicus, after the time humans realized that through science, we could actually get a real answer to almost every question about our world, like where does the sun go at night? And why does disease spread so quickly on a cruise ship? And speaking of cruise ships, I don't mind that the Noah story is impossibly childish. Okay, I do mind. What am I saying? I mind very much. Seriously, people, you believe a man, Noah, lived to be 900 years old. That's what the Bible says. But get this. What the Christians who are now protesting this movie are upset about is that it doesn't take the biblical story literally enough. They're mad because this made-up story doesn't stay true to their made-up story. But the thing that's really disturbing about Noah isn't the silly. It's that it's immoral. It's about a psychotic mass murderer who gets away with it, and his name is God.
And I will tell you that all the laughter from that point, from the audience and his guests who had just been sort of hoo-hoo, just became very nervous when he called God a, quote, psychotic mass murderer. Bill Maher, he's a very intelligent man. He's very profane. He's a devout atheist. And in many ways, he and I won't have a whole lot in common, but I'm not so sure that his statement ended up being what he wanted it to be. He was trying to tear down the Christian faith, but I'm not sure he ends up doing that through that statement. He is essentially asking the question, can God be trusted? Is he trustworthy? Can what we know about the Lord be trusted? And maybe even more important, as we live out our lives and as we experience the world around us with its trouble and its pain and its heartache, can God still be trusted? We think we're sophisticated people, right? We have cell phones. We have sonograms. We have The Bachelorette, okay? And we don't even have to watch it on cable anymore. We can stream it now, right? We're advanced people. And yet we're not a whole lot different than people have always been. Because this question is the same question that people throughout history have asked over and over. Can God be trusted? You see, in my personal opinion, atheism is not going to be the issue. It's not a real challenge for the thinking church and for thinking skeptics. A much larger challenge for the church are the people who ask the question, can God be trusted? Because sometimes we don't feel like we have an answer for them. If God is so good, then why did this happen? Can he really be trusted? We've asked that question, haven't we? Our parents and our grandparents asked that question. And about 2,600 years ago, the Israelites asked the same question. A few chapters over from where we are now in Genesis, God made a promise to Abraham. And he said, I'm going to make a covenant with you. I'm going to make a promise to you. You and your descendants are going to be my people. I'm going to take care of you. And I'm going to prosper you. But hundreds of years later, those same people are in slavery in Egypt. And they find themselves under the rule of a Pharaoh who the Bible says knew not Joseph, who knew not their ancestor who had literally saved Egypt. And yet God heard their cries. He sent Moses and he led them out of slavery, led them through the Red Sea into the desert where God again made a covenant with them, with a promise with them and with Moses, this time on Mount Sinai in the form of the Ten Commandments. And he reiterated to them that they were his people and he was their God. From there, God led them into the promised land where he ultimately turned them into a nation. Into a powerful kingdom with a powerful throne. And he made another promise to them, this time to King David. And he said that his descendants would be royal heirs to the throne forever. But God's promises have always had responsibilities, haven't they? I mean, God says, if you will do this, then I will do this. I mean, that's the way God has always put it. If you'll do this, then I'll do this. He told the Israelites, don't turn away from me and follow the foreign gods. But they did it anyway. If you've read much of the Old Testament, you know that prophet after prophet and book after book is the same story of God's people turning away from him to follow whoever and whatever. I mean, they might have had other names like Baal and Asherah, but they're the same gods that we chase after today. They're the gods of wealth, the gods of power, the gods of sex, the gods of violence, the gods of entertainment, all the gods that pull us away from the one true God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You know, for hundreds of years, the prophet said, turn away. If you keep going that direction, there's going to be trouble. But the people didn't listen. And ultimately, the trouble came in the form of the Babylonian Empire, which ransacked Jerusalem, destroyed the temple, killed thousands and thousands of Jews, and then took about 10,000 of the very best and brightest and deported them away to a foreign land, to the land of Babylon. And that's where the Israelites had the same question that Bill Maher had, although in a different form. They wondered, can God be trusted? I mean, God made a promise to our ancestors, but here we are. God promises good things for his people, so, you know, why are my children struggling in the throes of addiction? Why did I get this diagnosis? Why is there this relationship trouble? Why is the world the way that it is? Can God be trusted? You know, when the waters are rising and our feet are starting to get wet, when we look at the weather report and we see what's happening and how long it's going to be happening, can God be trusted? The psalmist from exile in Babylon put it this way in Psalm 137 verse 4. He said, how can we sing the songs of the Lord while in a foreign land? In other words, you know, when we're not supposed to be where we end up being where we're not supposed to be, and it doesn't look like God's doing what he said he was going to be doing, can he be trusted? Now, some people will tell you, of course he can't be trusted. I mean, forget about what's happening in your life. Forget about all the troubles that you've got. Do you really want to put your trust in this book that is so blatantly false? You know, this story, as Bill Maher said, that's just made up. Anybody ever heard of the Epic of Gilgamesh? Okay, I see one, two, three, or four hands. You know, the Epic of Gilgamesh is supposedly the oldest surviving work of literature. It's from the Babylonian Empire, a couple thousand years earlier than what I was just talking about, all right? And it stars the hero, Utnapishtim. Now, that's a name I'm going to have to say very carefully and very fast, okay? Utnapishtim. In fact, I'm just going to say Utna, all right? I'm just going to say Utna, and that's going to keep me out of trouble this morning. In this whole epic, Utna hears that there's a flood coming, so he ends up building a boat, and he stocks the boat with animals and his family. And when the floodwaters finally recede, his boat ends up resting on a mountain. The animals and his family go out. They start the earth all over again. By the way, while he's waiting for the waters to go down, he opens up a window and sends out a raven. Sends out a dove. When he gets off the boat, the very first thing he does is offer sacrifices. Sound familiar? Huh? Oh, one major addition, Utna hired workers, and he gave them beer and ale to take into the boat with him. Now, by the way, Noah could have hired workers as well, all right? We're not really told that it was just Noah and his boys that built the ark. I just want you to understand that the Bible is one of over 200 flood narratives that we have that are from all these different religions and cultures from all over the world. And so there are people who scoff and say, "You're going to buy the one in the Bible? Really? I mean, almost every religion, almost every culture has one. How do you know you can trust that one? I mean, how do you know that's not made up?" There are flood versions from the Peruvian Indians, from the native Hawaiian Islanders, from the African Hottentots. I love that name. The African Hottentots, the Papago Indians of Arizona, the Hindus, the Chinese, the Egyptians, the Greeks, the Persians, the Australians, the Welsh, the Celts, the Aztecs, the Druids, on and on and on. I mean, out of these more than 200 flood narratives, in 95% of them, the flood was worldwide. In 88% of them, there was one family that was favored to be saved. In 70% of them, survival was by means of a boat. Kind of wondering how the other 30% survived the flood, but I don't really know, you know, without a boat. In 67%, animals were saved. In 66%, the flood was because of man's wickedness. In 57%, the boat ended up on a mountain. 35%, birds were sent from the boat. And in 9% of them, exactly 8 people were spared. And people say, "How can you trust the Bible's account?" Folks, to me, those statistics don't discredit anything. I mean, to me, it sounds like there might have been a flood, right? I mean, there might have actually been a flood. Follow me here, critic, okay? Just because there is a Toyota, a Honda, a Nissan, a Hyundai, a Chevy, an Oldsmobile, and a Porsche, does that mean there could not have possibly been Henry Ford, right? You can debate who actually created the first car, but I'll just say Henry Ford had the first assembly line of automobiles. Because there are now so many different types of automobiles, that does not discredit the fact that Henry Ford had the first manufacturing line of automobiles. In fact, if you go look at our parking lot, it points to the fact that somewhere along the way, somebody started building cars. I mean, if there is a truth, and if there is an enemy that seeks to discredit the truth, I promise you he's going to go after those stories. By the way, the other story that's told probably more often than any other story in cultures is the virgin birth. If there's an enemy, and if he is going after, and if he is a liar, one of the publishing companies on one of the songs we sang earlier was called "The Devil's a Liar." I don't know if you ever saw that. Since the devil's a liar publishing company, you know. I promise you, he's going to go after those stories. I don't find that as a challenge to, or any reason not to trust God. What it says to me is that the flood happened. And all of these ancient people knew about it, but the Israelites knew about it in a different way. Because it was part of who they were. It was part of who they were as a people. It was their story. They knew that it wasn't just any man. It was a man named Noah. They knew that it wasn't the gods of rain and wind and storm. They knew that it was the Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He was the one who sent the flood. And this is how they knew the story. Okay, much more specific than anyone else. We'll read some verses we didn't read last week. Begin with chapter 6, verse 17. God said, I'm going to bring floodwaters on the earth to destroy all life under the heavens. Every creature that has the breath of life in it. Everything on earth will perish, but I will establish my covenant with you. And you will enter the ark, you and your sons and your wife and your sons' wives with you. You see, God made a promise to Abraham. And he made a promise to Moses. And he made a promise to David. But the first promise that he made was to Noah. He said, I will establish my covenant with you. All the way over in verse 17 of chapter 7. It says, for 40 days the flood kept coming on the earth. And as the waters increased, they lifted the ark high above the earth. The waters rose and increased greatly on the earth. And the ark floated on the surface of the water. They rose greatly on the earth. And all the high mountains under the entire heavens were covered. The waters rose and covered the mountains to a depth of more than 20 feet. Every living thing that moved on the earth perished. Birds, livestock, wild animals, all the creatures that swarm over the earth and all of its mankind. Everything on dry land that had the breath of life in its nostrils died. Every living thing on the face of the earth was wiped out. Men and animals and the creatures that move along the ground and the birds of the air were wiped from the earth. Only Noah was left and those with him in the ark. The waters flooded the earth for 150 days, but God remembered Noah. You know, in Babylon, in exile, the Israelites were confronted with that question, can God be trusted? I mean, he's forgotten about us. Will he remember? According to the cultures around them, God was capricious. He was violent. You know, to use Bill Maher's term, he was a psychotic mass murderer. And you better be on the right side of God. But even in the midst of the pain that the exile had caused them, even in the midst of the pain of living in a violent world, the pain of being Babylonian subjects in a foreign land, the pain of seeing the Jerusalem temple ransacked and destroyed, the pain of seeing loved ones killed possibly right in front of them. Even in the midst of that pain, the Israelites knew differently. Because you see, it turns out that the answer to the question, can God be trusted, actually has to do with pain. I mean, it is pain that prompts that question in our hearts. The pain of betrayal, the pain of unrequited love, the pain of hopelessness, the pain of addiction, the pain of grief, the pain when our body doesn't work the way it used to work or the way that we want it to work. It is pain that raises that question, can God be trusted? But it is also pain that provides the answer. You see, most of us, we know the Noah story. We heard it as kids. We learned about the animals and the rainbow and all of that stuff. But most of us miss the most important detail. And that's the pain of God. You know, I've told you before that in our culture, we seem to have this idea that God is vindictive and he's just waiting to punish us when we get out of line. But the scriptures never paint God like that. In fact, as God has revealed himself through his word, we realize that justice and judgment always start out as pain in his heart. Genesis 6 tells us that God looked at the world and saw that it was violent. Not a whole lot's changed. You know, God looked at the world and it grieved him in his heart that he had ever even made it. The flood started out because of God's pain. Hold that thought for a moment, okay? The Israelites, they're in exile in Babylon. They don't give up on God. Ultimately, God is faithful. And after 70 years of exile, just as the prophet Jeremiah had told them specifically, they were pulled back into the promised land. But life was still hard. You know, there were still a couple more empires that were going to come their way. There were the Greeks, the empire of the Greeks that were led by Alexander. And then there was the empire of the Romans, which brings us to about 2,000 years ago. Although the Jews are living in their own land, they're still living under foreign occupation of the Roman government. Things are hard. And the question continues to be asked, Can God be trusted? I mean, God made a promise. Can he be trusted to come through? Years ago, Warren Buffett, not Jimmy Buffett, but Warren Buffett, okay? I don't know if you guys know the difference there, but Warren Buffett, when he was talking about the need for insiders to use their own money to invest in the stocks of the companies that they were running, I didn't realize this, but he actually coined this phrase that some of us know. Does anybody know the phrase? He says that those people need to have skin in the game. Skin in the game. Which is true in so many areas of our life. I mean, there's something crucial about when we offer people help, we also make sure that they have some sort of investment. That they have what Buffett called and what we've just sort of put into our vernacular, skin in the game. You see, what the story of Noah hinted at, what the Israelites really only partially understood was that the Lord our God is a God who does have skin in the game. But it's not metaphorical. It's literal. What the Israelites could never have understood. I mean, I know that they believed in faith that God could be trusted, but they really didn't understand why. They really didn't understand how. But we do. We know. We know that God sent his one and only Son. Jesus came into this world. He was born as a baby. He lived as a man. He developed friendships and followers and disciples, and he poured into their lives, and he showed them who God really was and how God really acted. And then he was put to death. And the same question that Bill Maher hinted at, the same question that you and I have, is the same question that the disciples asked on that first Friday night. Can God be trusted? I mean, they had followed this man for 3 years. He claimed to be the Messiah. He claimed to be, you know, the one that God was going to use to bring about ultimate freedom for not just his people, but all people. And now he was dead. Can God really be trusted? They asked that question on Friday. They asked that question on Saturday. And then on Sunday, everything changed. Those first century followers were able to see for the first time what the story of Noah had only hinted at. That God's plan for salvation for the world did come about through death. But it was not the death of the world through water. It was through the death of himself. God's plan for salvation of the world did involve one righteous man, but it wasn't the righteous man Noah. It was God's own Son, Jesus. And God's plan for salvation did involve, you know, the bringing in of all different types of species from all over the planet together. But it wasn't the animals. It was the church. Now it's Jew and Greek, slave and free, male and female. And because of the resurrection, the early Christians had a bedrock, solid certainty that they could rely on, that God could in fact be trusted, even when the waters were rising. And if you know anything about first century Christianity, there was a lot of water. You know, last week we talked about obedience. Sometimes God just tells you to pick up a board and a hammer and start building an ark. But if you're like me, I don't want to just know what to do. I'm not saying it's right, okay? I'm just telling you how it is. I want to know how things are going to turn out. I want to know how things are going to end up. But we know. We know because God suffers and grieves because of the sin in our world. We know that because God literally has skin in the game. We know that when God asks us to do something, we need to do it. Even as we said last week, even when we don't understand it. I mean, it's ultimately going to be for his glory and for our good. You know, today, if you're wondering if you should say yes to something that you're pretty confident God has determined for you to say yes to, I'm going to go ahead and encourage you to say yes. Say yes to God and be faithful. If you're wondering what's going to happen if you say no to something that you're pretty sure God wants you to say no to, he's prompting you to say no to it, I'm going to tell you to go ahead and say no. I mean, things may not end up being trouble-free, but if that's where God is leading you, he will take care of you. But understand this, our obedience, all the stuff we talked about last week, it really is only possible because God can be trusted. You know, maybe you're here this morning and this has been a week of floods or a month or a year or years, you know. Even when your feet are getting wet, I just want to remind you that God is a God who can be trusted. And he will bring you, he will bring me through it. And it doesn't have to be a flood. You know, you can trust God with the little stuff. You can trust him with that meeting tomorrow or that phone call you're about to make or that conversation that maybe spur of the moment or maybe it's a conversation you've been putting off having. You know, you can trust God with the little stuff and the big stuff. You see, it's pain that prompts us to ask that question. Can God be trusted? But it is also pain that supplies the answer, which is yes. Because our God is in pain for the world. And our God hurts when his children hurt. We have a God who has skin in the game. His hands were pierced on the cross for us, which means that even when the waters rise above our heads, okay, even when death itself comes and we end up having to face that for ourselves or for those people that we love, God can be trusted. Because the same God who remembered his promise to Noah is the same God who remembers his promise to us. And he has promised you and me that he would never leave us. He would never turn his back on us. He will never forsake us. Our God can be trusted. I have no idea what that means for you, but I'm just telling you what, that's been on my heart for the last couple of weeks, and I felt the need to share that with you. And if you're here this morning and you need somebody to pray with, we have Stephen ministers in the back of the auditorium, and they'll be there to pray with you one-on-one. Or you can come forward and speak with me, pray with me, talk about anything God's doing in your life. Or maybe just right while we're singing. You just go ahead and acknowledge to God what he already knows, the area or the areas that you don't trust him in. The places where you're not willing to let go of whatever that other little g God might be. Because you don't know that he can come through for you. I invite you to give that over to him this morning because he can be trusted. If your need is to step out, we invite you to do so as we stand and as we sing.